Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Create or Die. It's your host, Ike, and we're coming at you from the studio here in Saratoga Springs, and we've got some excited stuff to share. It's been a crazy week for me, and I'm sure it has been for you. I'm going to talk about some of the stuff that I got cooking and what I've done recently, as well as, and most importantly, we've got a special guest today. So if you want to find out who that is, you want to stay right here. Like I mentioned on the outset, it's been a big week. It's been a big week for me. This past Saturday, I got the pleasure of presenting at the Elevate Your Brand event at the Miller campus of the Salt Lake Community College there in Sandy. It was a good opportunity. There were some good folks gathered together, and this was primarily focused on veterans, entrepreneurs who served our country, and they're looking for lots of different things. You know, maybe they're starting out a business, maybe they've been doing it for a while and they're just looking to sharpen their saws. Well, I was grateful to be able to maybe give back a little bit and present, essentially the last episode on growing brand awareness through storytelling. I was able to present that and kind of expound on how infographics can be a great tool to do that. So, if you want a refresher, if you were there in person, you want to see it, go check out episode 76. Or if you're new to the program and you didn't get a chance to, and that's something that you think would be beneficial, check that action out. So, in addition to preparing for that event and keeping the wheels turning and the gears greased on my venture into full-time creative consulting under the banner of Crater Studio, things are going good. Things are going real good. In fact, I had the opportunity to go to lunch with my marketing team over there at MX today, and it was a send-off for our fearless leader who's moving on to a new opportunity. But what was fascinating is the number of people that asked me, how's it going? Or, are you glad that you made the jump? Da-da-da-da-da. And I was able to, without hesitation, say, you betcha. It's one of the best decisions I've made with regard to my career. And so things are good. I'm grateful for that, thankful for all the support, and it's only up from here, right? We're gonna continue to share, this adventure. If you follow me on LinkedIn or Facebook, you can see my little series, little 3-minute videos on full-time creative consulting. But on to the good stuff, on to the reason why you decided to watch or listen to this podcast today, this episode specific, and that, my friends, is because you wanted to get some of them knowledge nugs that we promise we're going to offer on this program from time to time. Hopefully every episode you can collect at least one. But yeah. Today, we got a special guest. He's a first-timer here on the program. He is a creative leader with 9 to 30 years of experience. He's been doing his own remote studio, Orca Creative, for the better part of the last 20 years. He is, experienced in branding, traditional agency life. That's where he sharpened his teeth. He's become an expert on working with clients, how to present to them remotely, how to ensure that good communication is had, you know, to ensure that you're getting paid, that you're working with clients that appreciate what you do. This is the place for those kind of answers. And so I was introduced to John Gilder, who is the, you know, chief creative officer of Orca Creative. I was introduced to him a few months back, and he's become a mentor of mine, you know, helping to kind of reinforce some of those instincts that I've had over the years, as well as teach me some new tips and tricks. And so I'm excited to share my conversation that I had with him. It's been, about a week ago, and I'm excited for you to hear what this guy's all about. So without further ado, my boy, John.
How has business been for you? I think it's been, 5 weeks since we talked?
Of a month. Yeah, 5 or 6 weeks, and things have been crazy. I, you know, when we first talked, you mentioned, you know, the tendency for companies to want to use all of your time or gobble up some of that time. And at the time I was like, huh, you know, that would be a good problem to have.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
but now I'm definitely experiencing that.
Yeah.
And so I can see it's important to build some boundaries.
It is. And it's one of those things I always say, the boundaries are built in the trenches. You don't put out a memo with your boundaries. It's like, yeah, you have to stay right here, or it's in how you work. You don't have to let somebody know that you're not going to respond after hours. If that's your personal boundary, they'll figure it out. Right.
Sure.
So what aspect of that have you been dealing with? Just someone wanting to gobble it up, or having too little for your stable of clients, or what aspect are you dealing with?
Yeah. So, I think it's just, you know, in my mind, as I say yes to projects or whatever, you know, they come through, and then I'll get some, you know, people I've worked with for a long time that tend to, on a weekly basis, it's like, oh, can you do me this solid? I need this turned around really quick. Or we thought this project was done, but another stakeholder came in with more revisions, and just kind of my desire to please people that definitely gets in the way. So I'll be like, yeah, sure, I'll make it work. And then thinking that, oh, maybe I can pass something off to a subcontractor, and then them being like, yeah, I've got plans tonight, you know, if you give me a couple days. So
yeah, exactly. It's tough, man. I know right where you're at, and it is all boundary setting and expectation setting, and it's hard. What I've learned to do, when maybe down in your gut wants to say no, but the people pleaser in you says yes, I've learned to let that gut feeling rise to the surface level of my voice to be able to say you know, anything at that point. It's like just starting to go down that path is the hard part. It's so much easier to say yes, but to say now, yeah, so let me, I'm looking at my schedule here. We're not going to be able to get to that tonight. Those are the ways you push back without saying no. I very, very, very rarely ever say no. You can say no by making it too expensive. You can say no by putting up boundaries up front, setting expectations along the way, establishing boundaries by saying, sorry, I know that's your stakeholder, but your fire is not my priority. Here's when we can get to that, right? Those sorts of things are how you establish boundaries. And especially when it's a friend or an ex-colleague asking for a solid, the way you deal with that is by acting just as professional in your communications with them as any other client, right? And that starts to say, man, Ike's taking this seriously. He's not just texting me an invoice. He's not just you know, doing it half-assed. It's like it starts, and then what that starts to align with is you can say, hey, man, like, I'm running a business here. I can't just pull you out of this fire, but you're doing it in a way that's not just saying no. You're educating them. You're educating them on why you can't do it and why it's going to cost more money and why you didn't plan for multiple rounds of reviews after they've already approved it. Uh-huh. Like, you start to, you know, start to keep a notebook and just jot down some of the scenarios where you've been in, And 9 times out of 10, it's your gut wanting to say no, and the people pleaser saying yes. And as soon as you say yes, you've lost the battle. Yeah. It's super awkward to come back after you've said yes, do the work, and then make it about, well, I need more money. Well, you should have said that up front. All of that. It's so much harder to go, ugh, I hear where you're coming from, but here's what we've got going on, and here's when we could accommodate that. It says, come up with a plan, dude. I'm not just your bro, dude, that's going to bail you out every time. That doesn't pay the bills, right? So, and again, doing it through a smile, not as a pretentious smile, but as like, I'm trying to help you out, but I'm running a business here, man. Like, it's the hardest thing for all creatives. I remember, hell, I still deal with it with some of my best clients. It's like, I know that's not near enough budget, but when they call it out as a favor and this is all we got, I will say yes, because 9 times out of 10, they're usually like, what's the budget? Yeah, we can accommodate. We'll pay you extra for that. They're a good client. So that's a boundary I formed the other way, where it's like, you can ask us for a favor and we will accommodate when it's within reason. Right. Mm-hmm. So
how I like that. I love that. Your comment about saying no without saying no, that, you know, and now that I think back on that, you know, I remember some scenarios working in house in my last place where it's, you know, the CEO, it's the night before this big event and he wants to make these changes, like, let's reanimate this whole thing. And literally we don't even have the time to render it. If we were to hit render right now, it wouldn't get done in time for the 9 a.m. meeting or something. So you're able to say, well, this is what I can do. We can, instead of a animation, we can do some still frames that still tell the story as a place.
Oftentimes what happens, and I just learned this with another client, is that we tend to go into a relationship with a client and thinking, well, you speak the same language as I do about animation and creative. I had a client asking for animation in a social campaign that they wanted. And that sent me down the same path as you when I hear animation. And then as we uncovered other things and we were digging into it, the animation was nothing more than a carousel ad.
Yeah.
Multiple images moving through. That's what they mean by animation. And I'm and so that's what I mean, where it's like, it's if you take the tact of like understanding and educating, well, what do you mean by animation? Because that doesn't jive up with my perception of it. And then they can say, well, you know, a carousel ad. And I can say, oh, okay, not animation. Yeah. Like a carousel, you know, multiple static images. Yeah. Or so in an initial client relationship, which I've got several new client relationships going on, and it's a lot of work onboarding a new client. You hear that term, and what it means is this is the way we communicate. We don't send things through text and email and in Google chat and then some other way on voicemail, right? It's like, here's the way we work. A lot, and I've found it to be extremely helpful along this discussion line of boundaries to establish how we work right up front. We send PDFs. When we have creative to show you, it will come in a PDF, not as a Photoshop layered file or some other way that oftentimes you don't uncover until you've sent it right before the meeting. And they're like, what's Acrobat? We don't have Acrobat. And they're like, oh my gosh. Like it helps you realize what you're dealing with right up front and where you need to put your time and education, where you know, again, when you're dealing with someone that's hiring you for your expertise and your skill, take the reins of that and say, I'm going to lead this. I'm going to educate you. This is why I do it this way. This is why I can't do it that way. When you're always educating, that education is what's sowing the seeds of becoming a good client, because Then the next time you don't have to go through all that again. Yeah. And then the next time you submit an invoice, they know it's due on receipt. It's not 30 days out. We discussed this when we first started talking, right? Like all of that stuff happens right up front, even if it's on a small project, because the tendency is I'm just doing a business card for a buddy, right? Or something like that. So I'm not going to take it serious. But the process you put around it is what conveys your level of seriousness. You know, it's like When I get an invoice from a contractor that I can tell they just created in InDesign, I think, oh, they've got no system for understanding what's late, what's been paid, hasn't been paid, how much have we paid them? Like, and that puts them in this place where it's like, oh, they're a solo freelancer. They're not running a serious business, right? It's just, and that's what you're trying to establish right now, is that, yeah, you're a solo freelancer, but you're building it as a business. And down the road, you may have three dudes with you, right? And that's why you're making these rules now. Like, we can't turn that around tonight. Are you kidding me? Maybe after you've been a client for a couple of years and paid a few mortgages of mine, and I will. Right.
No, I like that idea of onboarding and educating people right out of the gate. And I think you could also, you know, spin it in their favor. Like, you know, you're not just jumping through hoops to make me happy. This is going to make things more affordable for you, because if I get consolidated feedback, I'm going to get into the project once rather than having to get in and out 10 times.
Exactly. And that they've never heard that, because they don't work in our workflows. So they have no, oh, come on, you're just changing the color of his hat. And it's like, I've gone to the length of showing clients what that means. Like, let's do a screen share of what that means when you just want this thing. It's 20 minutes before I can turn it around and give it to you. And now you're asking me to do that 10 times in a month. Who's recouping that money, right? Yeah. Those sorts of things all convey that you're a serious businessman and not just a fly-by-night freelancer creative that can be stomped all over because some stakeholder couldn't look at it when they were supposed to.
Right, right.
I feel passionate about that.
Yeah, no, I love it. You got some clear processes.
So absolutely.
What are some other pieces of advice that you might have that'll save people in our positions, creatives, as well as, you know, clients?
Some of the things that I see, it's like you would never, it almost feels silly. And this sort of lines up with the remote work and having a remote team and all of those tools, is when you're in a remote culture, creative culture, people are scattered across time zones. I don't know if it's your dinner time, if it's your nap time, your yoga time. I don't care. Like, we work off deadlines. So to be able to send out directions, say to the team, and know that they got it. If it's an email, reply. How hard is it to reply, I got this and I'll dig into it? But what so many people think is, oh gosh, I have to have a thoughtful response before I, and then they never do. And then what happens is, I don't know if they got it. That may, all of the things that spiral, right? Instead of just saying, got it, I'll look at it and get back to you. Stuff like that is so key. And it all ladders up to communication, right? It's like, trying to determine, hey, Ike seems to communicate over email. That's how I'm going to communicate with him. I'm not going to send him files over text message that he's not set up to ingest, and then he'll lose it, and then he won't know that he had it or whatever, right? Like, being able to I call it over communicating. And it's like, I want to know that you've got this, because in my mind, it's not off my plate until you've replied that it's on yours.
Right. And
so that's part of the team culture, where it's like, we all understand why that's important for each other. The other thing is that it allows that to do is, if it is something that needs a lot of your thought and brain power, just being able to, I don't want your rushed, quick response just so you can reply to me tonight. I'd rather have that be, I've got it. Let me spend a minute with this. I'm busy tomorrow. You'll probably have it here. Why can't we do that as a team? And having someone on the team that can crack the whip and say, hey guys, let's put this here. The reason it goes here is because of X, Y, and Z. Because when John's working on it at 2 a.m. and so-and-so's sound asleep, I'm stuck in the mud because I don't know where it's at, right? So that those over-communicating and having a system, you know, there's lots of calendaring systems that work now where we're trying to get out from underneath the, like, what's your availability here? And what's your availability? And what's your availability? And the poor bastard that has to figure out everyone's availability across time zones when there's technology out there to just say, here's our calendars, right? And it just, what I'm doing in my remote creative development shop is getting rid of the garbage that doesn't work for me. And I'm finding that my team is super appreciative of it because it's the same garbage to them. We're a super senior team. We've all dealt with it, right? We all know that it's communication is important, and it becomes glaring when someone new comes to the team and they don't, or they don't do it right. Or, I would say, communication, like anything, even if you're in a physical building, you're scattered about 4 floors. Well, that's no different than what you and I are doing right now, right? Well, so how do you communicate in a way, that conveys what you're doing? And just that sort of thing builds confidence in the team. And I don't need to worry about Ike. I don't need to bug him. He knows it's due tomorrow. I'll get it tomorrow. He always delivers. Yeah. That's what you're building for yourself when you're first starting out, which is why I say I love existing clients, because we've done all that work, right? It's like having a long-term girlfriend, you guys know, or a wife or whatever. It's like you tend to know the way each other works, and that becomes, I think that becomes important. The other thing, the biggest thing, I think, having been, raised in the traditional creative agency world, TV, radio, print, outdoor, that's all it was. We would print stuff out, we would comp it up on boards and show actual old school boards. And so there was a certain level of craftsmanship on display. Mm-hmm. Like, if heaven help you, if you were an art director and you had some sort of dog hair sprayed into your boards, right? Or like, just what it says, oh my gosh, this guy's not, he's not a craftsman. He doesn't care about his craft. It's like his paper's torn, whatever. Well, there's a modern equivalent of that. The same as Photoshop was built in the dark room and now it's all digital, so was this. I just totally lost my train of thought.
So with regards to like presenting things digitally?
Oh, the craftsmanship. Yes, the craftsmanship is still there. It's just digital, right? It's like knowing I'm not going to build an extremely vertical presentation to show you my creative work and all of your team remotely when we're all looking on a super wide screen, right? And building out creative presentations, knowing we're presenting this to mid-level, or they're going to take what we're presenting and show it to someone else. So we have to be able to present it, but write into it in a way that it can present itself as well, and stand alone, and developing creative into a presentation that can stand alone and look good on a remote presentation. It's something I've honed and refined and didn't realize kind of the craft that it is until I started seeing how other people were attempting to do it. And it's something I've been doing for so long. It's just second nature. And it's stuff like when you're on a remote presentation and you're getting ready to show work of any kind, copy, art, copy and art, strategy, media, money, whatever, and you've got multiple people coming into that call, they're all coming from multiple other places, right? Scrambling, they're probably late, they're coming into the meeting, now we're all here, oh great, Ike's finally here, let's go guys. And people are still settling in, right? And so if I jump right into the presentation of creative, most people aren't even tuned in yet. They're still settling in. And I've realized through the years that a great approach to settle everybody is to have my main header slide, title slide up, of just shows what we're going over while everyone's getting on, and they all get on. Yeah. And then I say, okay, let's just jump in here and recap for everyone. And I do an overview slide that's got 6 or 8 bullet points on it. And everyone knows the bullet points. We've discussed it ad nauseum. It's a way for me to say, here's what we discussed, here's what we're doing. And what it does is it focuses everybody on the screen. They're looking at those bullets. Now, by the time I get ready to jump into my platform write-up that I really want them to care about, everyone's looking at the screen. And then I take them through it, right? That sounds like, horseshit. And then I've seen it happen so many times where it's like, I'm sorry, can you start over? I couldn't get my screen to work. And it's like, if you put something up that feels like they need to pay attention to this, it serves the purpose of focusing everybody, focusing me, because I can come in and read that and go, okay, here's what we're going over, and then walk them through it. And then at the end of that, being very clear on what next steps are, identifying that before the call, and the last slide is next steps. So at the very end, we can talk about that and then carve out, hey, I need this from you and this. We're going to do this and this, and then we'll probably regroup next week and show you where we're at for final, right? And then you all agree on that, and then you can spit that back to them afterwards so that by next week, they don't forget it all. Like, this is all the over-communication where when you're only communicating with people digitally through email and text and stuff like that, you have to sort of maximize the focus that you get or even create some of it yourself. And so, when that presentation's over, you send it along and it goes to the stakeholder that wasn't able to be at the meeting. And then that's what you can point at and say, hey, we sent that out. I'm sorry you didn't see it 3 weeks ago, but now is not the time to change it. We can't get to this until next week. Yeah. You still want that. So just like always communicating and always educating, and it solves so many problems. Like, it would work. It would be just as effective if we were all in the same space, physical space, but we communicated this way. Like, when you're in a building, it's like you send something. It's like, did he get that? It looks like he's gone for the day. I needed something from him. Like, why couldn't he just say, hey, I'm going to focus on this tomorrow or whatever? So,
yeah. Or even face to face in a meeting. Absolutely. The beginning, a lot of people are kind of catching up, small talk, you know, how are you? And they're not really paying attention. So I like that idea of your first handful of slides or recap. And
absolutely. Calming the room down, right? Like, maybe even a quote that feels like a nice thought starter, just something, something that gets everyone settled. And when you think about it, what's the equivalent of that in the physical space? Everyone's coming into the room, gathering around the table. Oh shit, Tim's late. He's always late. Here he comes. And someone's futzing with a cord to get it up on the screen. And it's like, that still happens digitally, but you just can't see it all. That's just one of those things. Like, I wish I could teach a class to last year students that were about to go out into the space, because so much work lives and dies in a presentation when the client's like, now, wait a minute, what's this? Well, whatever your answer is either going to kill it or save it. And so if you're not optimized in what you're doing. Oh, and the other one is the dreaded, like we've just shown four examples. Let's make a resting slide at the end so we can see all four. And I'm not scrolling back and forth. Oh, go back to page two. Oh, no, go to page 18. And it's like, they're all right here. Let's talk about them here. And it helps sort of guide the conversation and keep it focused. And that all adds up to spending more time doing the work, worrying about the work.
Yeah. No, I love it. So earlier you mentioned, you know, being on the same page, over communication. And I thought somewhere in there you mentioned having someone who can kind of manage that a little bit. Were you advocating for some type of a project manager, or is that just another hat that you wear?
I've worn it forever, and I think I always will in some regard, but having someone dedicated, even if it's the, I always explained it like this. I love the, you know, like a really good photographer or a really good illustrator that really has, you know, they've got a business going. Well, they've always got like a studio manager or a producer, like their right hand person, right? You're always hearing from Erica, you know, Ike's producer, and she knows everything. I would get there as quickly as you can, even if it's bringing in an intern that you're paying $20 an hour for 10 hours a week or whatever it is. Yeah. Somebody that, you know, or somebody that's freelancing that can just, if you don't have them, you're doing it. And the busier you get, the more of it you're going to do, the less time you'll have for the creative work. And you'll find all day long, you're dealing with meetings and writing proposals. And next thing you know, you're not doing any creative. Yeah. Bring in a person where you can say, hey, I've got three projects. Can you help me project manage these? I've got X amount for you to, you know, just help me communicate with the client. And the biggest thing is just doing it. And then you figure out a process and it starts to take off. Yeah. That has been the biggest help for me, because that person then, when a totally new client calls, they can respond to them. They can help you out when you need, hey, can you go through the spreadsheet and pull all this info out that I need for this thing that I'm designing for, whatever. Like, and then at the lowest common denominator, it's just feeling like you've got somebody in it that knows as much as you do about what's going on that isn't your wife or your family. So you don't have to explain it to them. You know what I mean? It's like having that work partner that's like, you could just text, hey, I got an email from this client. They're freaking out. Can you reach out to them? Whatever. You become they become your wingman. And having that first person, like I remember when I first brought Derek on, he was sort of that. He was a designer that I could give stuff to and know it would be done right. And it allowed me to focus on other things while he was still developing really solid creative work. Yeah. You know, and then he moved along, but it helped me establish it enough that, you know, you don't, maybe if you want to be seen as Ike, the solo designer, and you get to a point where you're like, well, I make $400 an hour because that's how good I am and people want my stuff. Or do you want to build more of like a little design studio of four or five people and, you know, you guys are billing $800,000 a year and there's plenty of money for all of you and you're doing great work. And like, both of those are valid options, and they both start with having that right hand person that, and it immediately says to the people watching, this isn't going to be just the Ike show. Like, I'm building this. And then you can be like, hey, producer or project manager, can you reach out? Can you reach out to John? I need one of his writers to help me on this stuff. And then they handle that. And I say, oh crap, I can't talk till tomorrow. And it slips off your radar, but your wingman has it, you know, that sort of thing is sort of how you get to a spot, I think, where you're building it into something more than just you that does it all. It always starts there.
Yeah.
First time you get a project that feels like it has some good budget to it, maybe consider carving off a little bit of even what you'd have taken for yourself off of it and bring that person in and see if they can't, you know, if you just said, I'm going to take $2,500 of what I make over the next 4 months and apply, hey, project manager, I've got $500 for you to do X, Y, and Z on this. I'll set you up with an email and all of that. You're on your way, dude. It makes it so much easier to do the next one and the next one when you have
I love it. Yeah. And I remember, well, not like it was that long ago, but being in-house and training up new designers and thinking like, you know, I can do this thing 10 times faster than this other person. Does it make sense to delegate it? Well, if you look at it that way, maybe not, but you're, like you say, you're building your future. You're building the ability to scale and not do it all yourself.
Yep. It gets really hard to get caught in that trap of it's going to take more time to bring somebody else up to speed on this than if I just do it myself. It's that's the hamster wheel, and you'll never get off it. You have to bite the bullet and say, I've got to get somebody up to speed on this, right? And that can be strategic about maybe, you know, it's a client that has a few projects where you're like, if I can get this guy up to speed on this look, then I can feed him these other things. And now you're looking at work saying, okay, on anything I'm farming out, let's say I have $1,000 budget, I'm going to take 20% of that off of the top, right off of that. And that's going to be for your agency overhead and to run it. And then the rest you'll say, okay, I've got 800 left. I'm going to pay this person 500. They're doing the bulk of the work. I'm going to oversee it, manage the client. I'll keep the rest.
Yep.
Sure, you'd have rather had 1,000, but you'd have had to do all the 1,000 worth of work. And now you've got someone sort of spun up into your system that you can give the next one. And now it's the $2,000 project. And you're like, hey, I've got 700 for you. Yeah. Now you're making more, right? And it's sort of this self-fulfilling prophecy or a hamster wheel. And I there's been so many times I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so underwater right now. I wish I could just farm this out. And it's like, that's why it's so important for me to farm it out to someone that I know will deliver. It's like, not only am I giving up the income I could be making if I just did it, but if I have you do it and it's no good, now I still have to pay you and then still go do it.
Right.
Like that's, and always sort of when you're starting out, protect yourself on your budgets. Like say if you've got $1,000 and that's your full budget for that person, tell them you have 800. Keep some cushion for yourself always. And it becomes this strategy where it's like, well, hell, if I can manage this in a way that they can do this for $500, then I'm going to get the benefit of that extra. Right. And so, and then you're still doing your own work, but you're saying, I want to focus all my time on these two projects. I'll oversee these four projects. There's no way in hell I can do all six by himself. Right. Yeah. It's like, that's how you get there. And that's where you start out by not favors, take care of them with your money, but your buddies. Hey, can you help me out on this? I know you're going to kill it. I'm slammed on this thing, but I need to deliver good work. Can you get me there? I've got this much for it. Never, never get into a situation with your contractors where they're running a tab with you. It's just, it's human nature to somehow pad or to not. Just stick to, here's what I need from you. I need three drawings and one of them inked, and I've got $500. Like, that's what it is. And then that way you can say, you know, hey, I didn't add an extra one, but if I did, I'll pay you for it. That's the line, not like, I don't care how many hours it took you. I'm paying for your drawings, dude. Like, maybe you do them really quick. I don't know. But when you start looking at it like this, from this perspective, you start getting closer to what I've built with Orca, as opposed to where I started out was, a solo freelancer being hired by agencies that wanted all of my time, mm-hmm. even at a really good rate. I'm like, no way. In six yeah. months when this work's gone, guess what? So am I. And yeah. so are all my clients that are I was trying to grow. You can yeah. have 10 hours a week and I can do X, Y, and Z for that. If that's not good enough, take a hike. Yeah. You know, that's those back around to the boundaries again, right? Like,
yeah. So what do you find makes some of the best contractors for you, or, you know, be them a creative or, you know, more left brain developer types?
So I would say to me, the best contractors are the ones that are doing it full time. They're out there looking to kill what they're going to feed their family. And that brings a whole different mindset than an employee trying to think about how can I skate out of here early on Friday and not have anyone find out, right? Like contracting's not for everybody, but somebody that's serious about it, that pays their mortgage by being a contractor, mm-hmm. shows up on time, they care about their work, they care if they make mistakes, they care. That's the biggest thing. They care all the way through the process. They care about the quality of their work. They care the least about, you know, the all the extraneous stuff. They're in it to do really good work at what they do. And they're really easy to work with because they know what's important. Showing up on time, knowing how to work a Zoom meeting or a Google meeting or any of the different meetings, like all of those sorts of things. Like good creatives, a great illustrator, I can find those anywhere, right? But somebody, great art director, creative director, they're everywhere. But someone that does it with your specific approach and process, that's what makes me want to come back and go, God, he's really good and so easy to work with. And he over delivers. He's never late. He sticks to what he says he's going to charge me. Like, I want to work with that guy. Like that's so, it's so important to sort of have that mindset, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that I discovered early on is just, you know, to your point, there are a lot of talented people out there and, you know, maybe they have this great pedigree. They went to these great schools or they've worked at these places, but what seems to be more rare and more valuable and something that's harder to teach is someone with that ethic and business acumen, knowing, you know, what's important and the importance of, you know, over communicating and then delivering on what you say.
I remember when I was starting out, I found out the hard way. I went through a lot of people where it was like, hey, Ike, I got a project for you. And then the day before we deliver, I'm like, where are we at on that? And you're like, oh crap, my son got sick and I forgot to do it. And I'm like, holy crap. Like I didn't even know this could happen. You know, I thought everyone took it seriously like me, a deadline. And you know, then you're up all night doing it yourself so you can save face with the client, like being aware of those sorts of things, you know, who like that stuff. You definitely want to stick to your tribe, the people, you know, who can deliver at first before you branch out. I have a really hard time branching out beyond the people that I work with all the time because we've been in the battles together so often. And then when someone new comes along, until they assuage me, that's like, gosh, they're replying, you know, that like they're in it. I can tell they're in it, right? Like that you can just tell. And that starts to make me feel better. And then I see people start making their own decisions and figuring out their own stuff. And it's like, man, now I like to say I like to create a space where good work can be done. And that's true whether you're a creative or a financial person. It's just like I trying to create an environment where we can do great work. To me, is about the communication and the care, the give a damn of the team, right? Like how much do they give a damn about what we're all trying to do? And the more I can show my team that I'm not just extracting all your hard work and I'm out in Europe on vacation, drinking wine and buying speedboats and all this shit. It's like, I'm in there with you. Like, we're doing this together. It's funny. I won't mention any names, but I had an interesting experience in Salt Lake through the ad agency scene, where there was a creative director at a shop that was my hero growing up. I followed them through every, you know, communication art at every award show. And they were as close to Michael Jordan as somebody could be that wasn't.
Yeah.
And I got a chance to work with them, and it was the biggest letdown I've ever experienced, because they were a misogynistic asshole, cocky, insecure jerk. And it never occurred to me, because I had only looked at them through this lens of a hero, like they could do no wrong. And then to see who they were as a person is when I started that place of like, there's lots of good creatives. There's not lots of really good people that are also really good creatives.
Yeah.
You strike me as that kind of a guy, right? Where it's like, you're not, so much of it is you've got there's people with humble confidence, and then the cocky assholes. And it's the cocky assholes that are usually super insecure, and the humble superstars those are the ones you want to work with. Like, I always say, I'll never get mad at anyone for making the wrong decision. I'll get super pissed if you don't make a decision at all and wait for me to do it, right? It's like, I'm creating a space where you should be able to make that decision. And if it was the wrong one, shit, that sucks, and it costs some money, but damn it, we'll learn from that, right? And those sorts of things.
Mistakes of boldness.
Absolutely. A mistake, that's a good way to put it. Mistakes of boldness are learning mistakes, right? Yeah. Versus what's the opposite? Mistakes of laziness, or mistakes of not caring, or it's funny. I learned so much about craftsmanship going to art school in the mid-90s, cutting amberlith and rubylith and copy fitting, and old school hand craftsmanship taught me the value of, you know, if I don't put the glue on this shit just right, it's going to squish out the edge and then make a mark, and someone's going to see it. And like, that's the same as making sure I have a voicemail that's on my phone. So when people call, it doesn't say, this voicemail's full. Like, what does that say to the person contacting you, right? It's all about, you know, it's not so much craftsmanship as it's turned into give a damn, right? Just showing that you care, proving that you care. Like, you know, all of that stuff adds up to being able to tell pretty quickly who you're dealing with in another person. Like, spend a couple weeks with someone and you can kind of tell, are they on the right path? Yeah, I think they are. They've got stuff to learn, or this ain't going to happen. You know, I'm pretty intuitive when it comes to that sort of thing, but it's just, I know what sort of contractor I'm looking for and what sort of person will fit in great with my group. And it's so much more about the quality of their creative. That's the cost of entry. You got to be good.
Yeah.
Or else we're not even on the phone, right? It's like, come on.
Right.
Or you're a student and I'm helping teach you and guide you and grow you, right? Like, if you're wanting $100 an hour or more, you better be showing up with some real shit, right? Yeah. Like, what else can I answer for you?
This has been amazing, and I'm quickly realizing here we are 47 minutes in, and we're just scratching the surface. This might need to turn into a series. Have you on a couple?
Oh, I'd minutes. Love it, dude. Yeah, let me know. I love talking about remote creative development and all that goes into the cultures that it can come from. And the other thing I'm a big proponent of is helping students in any way I can, and fledgling creatives that are just starting out. I remember my first 6 months in my very first agency going, holy shit, I had no idea. I've learned more in my first 6 months at work than I did my whole time in school. Yeah. No one taught me about meetings and meeting etiquette. And this was in the early 90s, right? Where it was their email had just barely come around. And so it was more about It was a different sort of culture, but a lot of the same stuff, creative feedback and having someone do it as an asshole versus, you know, giving you constructive criticism. And I didn't know there was any other thing because you're used to having teachers give you criticism. And sure. Oh man, it's there's I love talking about all of that stuff. I'd love to do a series if you're up for it. And and maybe I ramble a lot, so maybe what we do is you send me a handful of questions that you want to cover in the time we have. And if we just do a timer and say, let's move on to the next one so we can get it, yeah. I'm totally cool with that. Okay,
great.
That'd be fun, man.
Let's do it. No, it's been fun having you on the program. And you know, I love it because I get just as much or more out of this than anyone listening. So, and you really help to reinforce some of the things that are deep down in my gut that I think are right. And then just hearing them from you and that you've made them work for over a decade is awesome.
It's such a good feeling when somebody older than you in the profession validates a gut feeling that you already have. I have it. I still have it. I've always had it all the way through my career. It's a cool thing. Like, gosh, I knew it didn't have to be that way. And here's someone doing it right. Like to have someone to point to and say, this is what I want to emulate. Or it's fun. I love it. I love creating a space for people to be creative. I think at the end of the day, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. No, I love it. That's great. Thanks, John. Appreciate you being on the program once again. It was a real pleasure. I know you're a busy guy and really appreciate you taking the time. So for all my listeners, viewers out there, I hope you enjoyed this. Hope you were able to pick up some knowledge nugs from John and I and our conversation. He's a wealth of knowledge, as you can attest to now that you've spent a better part of an hour with him. And so, you know, please reach out to him. You can find him at orcakillercreative.com. His website for his remote studio, you know, scroll all the way down to the bottom of that site where you'll find his contact information. And of course, if you're a big brand, Coca-Cola, Nike, Adidas, you know, 49ers, he might be a Seahawks fan. Regardless, reach out, and he's your guy. He can pull together a team of A players to ensure that you get some quality work and enjoy your time doing it at the same time. So, as was mentioned, you know, John is game for coming on again, making this a series, you know, doing this on the regular. So if you have specific questions that you would like answered or topics covered, you know, please reach out. Let me know in the comments. Let John know as well, and we'll make it happen. You know, the more he hears from you telling him that, hey, you saw him on Create or Die and you just loved it, the better it is for all of us. We can all benefit from what it is that he's got to share. So I'm excited. I'm excited to meet people like John, and that's literally the best. Our community here in the creative world is amazing. I really appreciated what John had to say about the importance of being a good human. You know, I mean, you can be super creative, have great skills, but if you're a jerk, then, you know, ain't no one gonna want to work with you long term. And that's really what is in short supply and a little more hard to come by. That is someone who's talented and friendly face. Someone who is going to be there when they say they're going to be there. They're going to deliver it on time and on budget. That's what's rare. Too often, especially, you know, in this world of hiding behind computer screens and not having to interface face to face. It's more text and email. You know, it's easy to just say, oh, you know, something came up, I'm not going to be able to deliver this in time, or woe is me, I've got hard things happening in my life. And you don't have to see the person's disappointment or disapproval, you know. And then on the flip side, they can say, oh, I understand and everything, but then you just never end up hearing from that client or customer again, potentially. So if you picked up anything from this and you're an aspiring creative, or really whatever it is you do, you're a plumber, you're an electrician, you're, you know, a burger flipper over at In-N-Out, whatever it is, do what you say you're gonna do. That's it. Like, if you're expected to be there at a certain time, be there. You know, if something's meant to be delivered at a certain time, deliver it. You know, it's not to say that, you know, unforeseen things happen and that there's a rare case where a ball gets dropped, but that should be very rare. And you should show that you did everything in your power to try to prevent that from happening. You know, I'm going to give a little plug to Alpha Graphics. So there's a gentleman who we've worked with at MX for a long time, and I've worked with him, you know, through other companies as I've started my journey on this full-time creative consulting. Now, Steve Dunford is his name. I don't think he would mind me dropping that, but the guy is great to work with. He does it with a smile. He's professional. He's quick. He comes up with great ideas. He makes you feel like, you know, you're his number one client, when in reality he's got 50 others that he treats the same way, if not more. And you know, I saw something from him on social this past week where he was in Park City running around to different stores looking for a specific backpack for one of his clients, because he had ordered a bunch of backpacks and the delivery was going to be late. Now, he could have told the client, like, you know, really sorry, but they didn't get delivered. But instead, he decided to take a day or two and drive up and down the state, you know, stopping in at these little stores that are known to carry them, and kind of buying all the backpacks on hand just to deliver. Now, on paper, that may not make sense, you know. You're spending a lot of your valuable time chasing this stuff down, but his brand promise of ensuring that he's going to make the deadline no matter what stays intact. Now, there's been times where, you know, I've asked for a certain thing and I've expected a certain level of quality, and he's tried to make it happen, but it's just not feasible within the time or the budget. But every time he comes up with a solid, you know, solution so that he can still deliver to the best of his abilities. So take that for what it is, but that's why I continue to refer him wherever possible, and that's why people that I know, you know, struggle to go anywhere else, because he does what he says he's gonna do. Well, friends, it's time that I bid you farewell. So until next time, keep on creating. Create or die.